没有。
Hi everyone, I'm Sarah. Ooh, and I'm very nervous. I'm going to say that up front. And I've just been shaking on the inside, but now it's like all on the outside too. Hopefully I won't need a drink because it'll be all over my body. Anyway, I know that'll go away though. My nerves will slow down and hopefully I'll let my higher power take over. So I'm just going to start first by doing some of the formalities of being here today. I want to thank the committee. This has been a fantastic couple of days for me, and I'm looking forward to more today and the dance tonight. And it's just a wonderful group here. Glenda and Joe are the people who heard me before and asked me to come here today, and I appreciate that. I also have, my whole posse here in the front two rows. And I want to thank them, because I would not be here today if it wasn't for my family and my friends who love me. So I have my husband. He's here. And I'm from Syracuse, New York, originally. I live in Montgomery, Alabama now. But my very first grand sponsor in Syracuse now lives in Myrtle Beach. And her name is Joan, and she's here today with me and her husband. And I'm honored for that. I have my dad and my stepmom here who've been a wonderful example of both programs, AA and Al-Anon. I have my very first neighbor in Syracuse, New York here, Ted, and I want to call him his whole full name, but because that's what I call him by, but in the honor of he's Ted H. And him and his wife are here. That's an honor. And then I have some close friends, Rob and Jessica, and their son Lucas is here too. So one of the neat things about that is that I knew Rob's mom and dad in the Al-Anon program and came to know him afterwards. But he comes from great parents, and his mom passed away some years ago. And I had the pleasure of just carrying the Al-Anon program to her home through her illness. And, you know, it's just amazing the things that we can do. But never in a million years did I think I'd be in Myrtle Beach, you know, with her son now here. So anyway, I love these programs. So if there's anything that, you know, my will wants to bring forward today is for y'all to know how much I love these programs. So I'm starting to calm down a little bit. Thank God. Anyway, I am an active member of Al-Anon. I go to a lot of meetings. My home group is the fellowship group. So we meet four nights a week at 6 o'clock, and then we have a step meeting on Sundays at 2 in Montgomery, Alabama. So if you're ever there, come on. We also have a great AA group, and they meet six times a week. So I stay active. I have a sponsor. I have sponsees. I go to lots of meetings. I do service work. I do my best to, you know, just give back to this program and, you know, continue to take from the program so that I can have the life that I have. But my story is definitely about the family disease. My husband deserves this, and people pick on him a lot when I'm going to be the speaker about, like, you know, hearing all these things about him and the real story and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, the truth of the matter is it's really not about him. And it's not even about my parents. You know, although I will say my dad's a recovering alcoholic, my story is about the family disease. So I'm going to do my best to just talk about that and talk about how the program taught me to get better and just live and have a spiritual life. So I mentioned already I'm from Syracuse, New York, and I am the middle of five children. I was born into a Irish Catholic family and a big family. And, you know, I mean, drinking and was just always there. So, I mean, it just was when I was a child. And we drank for baptisms, we drank at funerals, they drank at weddings, they drank at divorces, they drank at whatever. I mean, there was going to be drinking. And it's just what I knew, and you know, that was fine. Being the middle child, my dad might tell this differently, but what I felt like, you know, for me was I was the middle child. I isolated a lot. I tried to stay under the radar. I didn't like confrontation. You know, I just kind of wanted to have like the peace and just be away from it as much as possible. Just an example of what my life was like when I was in the seventh grade, during the summer between my seventh and eighth grade, I spent 45 days at my friend's house, like just straight. Like I just stayed at my friend's house. You know, thinking back, like that's not quite right, but that's how it was. I don't remember having to be a decision that I didn't want to be at home, but I just wasn't at home. And spent a lot of time like that with friends and away from the house. I don't know when it came to me that, I don't know, I guess just that like the drinking wasn't the way I wanted it to be, or that I didn't want to be around it, but I know that it did at some point. Anyway, so I'm growing up. I have an older sister who's extremely gifted intellectually, very smart. And, you know, I don't know when it happened, but I definitely thought I didn't measure up to her intellectually. And I come from a family of a lot of athletes. Like, my dad was a basketball coach and enjoy sports, and sports was a big part of our life. And anyway, I seemed to do better in the athletic area than in the academic area. So I played a lot of sports. I was an active, you know, adolescent doing that kind of stuff. And I was a fairly good athlete in soccer and in softball. I like both of those sports. But and I got a lot of attention from that. Like, my dad enjoyed sports, so my dad would be a lot of my sports events and stuff, and that was wonderful. But anyway, I get into high school, and I'm a freshman in high school, and, you know, whatever, just kind of doing my thing. And it was during my freshman year that I started dating my husband. And he was a senior, and I was a freshman. And from that minute forward, like, for a long time, I guess, several years, my Dennis became my life. So, it's interesting, like, when you think about the family disease, because, like, I mean, I was in high school, and I had drank some and that kind of stuff, and I certainly like to, you know, go out and party and dance and this kind of stuff. But my relationship with Dennis was the most important thing to me. And, you know, when I got into my relationship with him, that's when I started to drop things. Like, I'll hear alcoholics tell their story and say, you know, then the drink took this away or this away or this away. And for me, it was more like, you know, my relationship was more important than the things that had previously been important to me. So I wasn't as committed and putting forth the effort towards my training for sports and that kind of stuff. Like, I let that go when I started seeing Dennis. And, anyway, I was active in the church. I should start there, too. We were a Catholic family. My father was active, took us to church weekly and, you know, holy days and all of that. And I went to CCD and that kind of stuff. So I was at least, like, raised with some morals in the church and that kind of stuff. But when I started seeing Dennis, there were things that with that I also just kind of threw to the wayside, not just my sports, but the things that were important to me, I started to throw to the side. And when I was 16, I got pregnant. And so, you know, Dennis and I'm pregnant. We're going to have a child. But that was, you know, I think back to that time, and it's just like, it seems like so amazing how naive and young and all those things I was. But really, like, we were going to live on love, like seriously live on love. God, you know what's really interesting about that, though, is like today I really could just live on love. I really could. It's so funny, like, the circle that this whole, like, spiritual experience has brought me on. But anyway, we were going to live on love, and we started out my whole idea living on, you know, with love with Dennis, though. But I was angry because, you know, I was 16 and pregnant. You know, it's not what I saw my life as. And so I was mad at God, right, because it was God's fault that I was pregnant. Because, you know, God can, like, not make that happen or make it happen. I didn't have anything to do with it, right? That's really how I thought. And so, but anyway, so we're gonna have our daughter. And, you know, I mean, I have four brothers and sisters. My husband has four brothers and sisters. We both have parents. And not once did I care or think about how that affected them. You know, as a matter of fact, I kind of was like, to my parents, you know, yeah, your Catholic daughter's pregnant. You know, why don't you go in and tell them really what's going on in our house and that kind of stuff. Like, I was just full of so much anger. And, you know, I've heard alcoholics say this too. You know, it's like, I'm not hurting anybody but myself. But that was true for me too. Like, I felt like I wasn't hurting anybody. And what I know today is I was. Like, my siblings were still in the school. They wouldn't let me come to school pregnant. You know, my younger brother and sister were still in school, you know, and I know today, like, well, and I learned it some time ago, but just, you know, how much that affected them, you know, and the shame and that kind of stuff that they had. You know, the beauty of the program is that I've had an opportunity to make amends to them. In the beginning when I was talking about my posse, I was also supposed to mention my sister Nancy. She told me to make sure I said her name because she's not here. So Nancy, who is a sober member of AA for 11 years, and I'm extremely proud of. But anyway, she, you know, and I used her. You know, she was my younger sister, and my God, she babysat and took care of my daughter so much for me. And I'd guilt her into it and whatever. But, you know, some years later, you know, the program gave me an opportunity to make amends to her because, wow, this is an interesting story. She had gotten sober in AA up in Syracuse. I was living in Montgomery. And for her home group, just her little home group, they were having their anniversary in, like, April of whatever. And she had said, oh, you need to come up and be the Al-Anon speaker. And at the time, we couldn't afford it. And, I mean, it wasn't, like, you know, where the speaker's expenses would be paid or whatever. And we couldn't afford it, and I, you know, said I couldn't go. And anyway, they went on and planned their thing. And then it turned out I had gotten a free frequent flyer ticket. My daughter was in college in New York, so I ended up actually flying up there the weekend of her anniversary. And not to be the speaker or anything like that, but then I was going to go with her to it. Well, Syracuse has this downpour of snow, like feet and feet and feet of snow, and the Al-Anon speaker didn't make it to her group celebration, and I was the Al-Anon speaker, you know, and it was just fantastic because, you know, and not in like the gloating way, but, you know, she was proud of me, you know, she was proud to have me there, and you know, and she could look at me and just be like, you know, that's my sister, and you know, I didn't do that at all. Like, that was just whatever, you know, coincidences. And and I was able to do that, and I continue to, you know, try to be the sister that they can be proud of today. But anyway, you know, so I'm an angry, pregnant 16-year-old. It's lovely. And big, because I had been an athlete, and no longer could I do anything but eat. And that's what I did. So I had, at this point, I come from generational alcoholism, and at this point, I'm 16. I have an uncle who's like 3 or 4, maybe 5 years sober in AA, one of my mother's brothers. I've got a couple other family members kind of going in and out, but he had put some time together, my Uncle Michael, and he took me to an Al-Anon meeting. So that was, and he took me to a couple like open Al-Anon meetings, this kind of stuff, but I actually was in an Al-Anon meeting when I was 16. And, you know, I figured I didn't really need it, didn't have any understanding of why it could help me. I figured I was leaving, you know, my family's home. I was leaving the alcoholism. I was going to be just fine. And I heard some things in that very first meeting, though, that stuck with me. I've heard heard people in AA say that, like, if you're an alcoholic and you go to an AA meeting, your drinking's never the same. What I know is things that I heard in that meeting made my life never the same. Because I have things settled in my heart that I knew there were ways that I could be living, but I wasn't. But it was in there. So anyway, the first thing that I remember really taking to heart was that I couldn't control the drinking. So that's like half of the first step. But like I lived on that half of the first step for a long time, because I didn't see that my life was unmanageable. I mean, really. 16, pregnant, no job, living on love. What's unmanageable about that, you know? I mean, I thought I had, like, you know, everything going for me. But anyway, so that was silly. I love it. So I go to that meeting, and, you know, and at this time, like, my parents were drinking a lot. There was, you know, lots of craziness going on in the house. But I just took the attitude, like, okay, like, I can't control it, and I don't really need to, and so I just dropped it at that. But anyway, what happens is Dennis and I go on. I have my daughter. I'm 16 years old, and, you know, Sandy talked about it on Thursday night, but, I mean, this is like, the defining person that I was. I didn't have a clue what to expect. You know, and really, like, there's no way to really ever describe childbirth unless you go through it. But you know what? I wasn't going to ask. You know, I mean, I was governed by, I didn't want you to know that I didn't know. Whatever. I mean, things that you don't know unless you ask. But, you know, my pride and ego was there saying, you should know this. And you're stupid, and you better not ask, because then they'll know that you're stupid, and then, oh, my God, then it's this big circle, like, of everybody just knowing how stupid I am, and it's not good for me, and, you know, but that's how I was. Like, I didn't want you to know I didn't know. And so, consequently, like, the day I have my daughter, you know, I remember just holding her and thinking, I'm so sorry, you know, like, looking at her and just thinking, I'm so sorry, I'm your mom, because I don't have a clue. Now I know a lot of moms go through that. Most moms have that kind of a sense, you know, when they have a child. But I didn't want you to know I felt like that. You needed to think that I was 16 and brilliant and needed, you know, knew how to live on love and be a perfect parent. So anyway, I needed you to know that I didn't, you know, that I knew everything. And like I had said, I had lost kind of faith in my higher power because, you know, my higher power had made me pregnant. So Dennis and I go off on our life. And, you know, there's a book in Al-Anon. It's my favorite book. It's called From Survival to Recovery. And it talks about growing up in alcoholism and, you know, surviving and then having recovery. And there's a section in there, and it describes what was going on in my life. And it says, hurt people, hurt people. And that's what Dennis and I did to each other for from the time we were like 17, 18 until we came into these programs. So the marriage at that point, we kept trying. You know, we'd have our little sit down and it'd be like, what do we need to do to be happy and responsible? What do we need to do? And we were like a unit, no doubt, in my mind. I was very enmeshed with Dennis. What do we need to do? And we'd make these plans. And no matter how we tried, though, you know, we'd be arguing and unhappy and blaming and all of those things. Dennis also comes from alcoholism. And I remember that I did think that we couldn't quite get it together just right and be, you know, the happy, great couple that I wanted us to be because we had both come from alcoholic homes. But anyway, some things that were happening in the marriage, there were a few commandments that got broken and, couple. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is the area where it's like, when I came into Al-Anon and I first started, to learn about alcoholism and, you know, that it's a disease and not a choice and, you I had always judged my mother, who was a drinker. She's passed away, but she never stopped drinking, but she was a drinker, and I always judge people as like above me or below me, and my mother was definitely one that I looked at below me. And so I never could quite kind of bring her up. And anyway, you know, in Al-Anon, I learned that, you know, it's a disease. It's not about a choice. And, and I'm so grateful because I did come to learn that my mother was just another woman on this earth doing the best that she could. And she didn't choose, you know, some of the behaviors and things that she did. They were part of alcoholism. But I can definitely understand the concept of like waking up and saying, I'm not going to do something and doing it. Like, I just can't stop. Like, I'll just do it anyway. Sometimes it still happens with like shopping and things. But back then it was big things. And I get that concept. Like, I truly, it's part of who I am. Like, you know, I'm not going to do this. I had it happen about, I came into Al-Anon in January of 1990. But about 10 years ago, I was working a job where I was complaining about it all the time, and I called my sponsor on the way to work and say, I am not going to gossip or complain about management when I get in the office today, period. 10 minutes. And why don't they do this, and why don't they do that, you know? And so it took me about 3 weeks to say, maybe I'll ask my higher power to not, you know, take away my gossip and my tendency to do that. But so that's what it was like before Al-Anon. Like, I was trying with my willpower to just, like, be a certain way, but no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't be that way. After you live like that for a while, or at least after I lived like that for a while, I turned angry and blaming. And so I was unhappy, and, you know, Dennis and I had done all the things that we said we were going to do that we thought would result in happiness. So we were... when we first got together, we had nothing, but we had worked our way up to where we were the youngest couple on the street we lived on, in this nice house, and we had two cars, and I was driving a Camaro, and, you know, working, and it was just like, you know, we are like, see, we did this, and that's how we tried to present ourselves for a while, but after too much of just pretending like that, there was, like I said, the commandments getting broken, things going on in the house. So I decided I didn't want to live like this anymore, and I was just going to go ahead and, get rid of the problem, which in my mind was Dennis. So let's just sit on that one for a minute. So anyway, when he tells his story, which thankfully he doesn't have a time this weekend, good one, Glenda, he says that I kicked him out with a spoon and a fork. And I'm sure I gave him a knife. But I did kick him when he was down. And I did do that. And we got a legal separation, and I blamed him, and I made him think it was all his fault, and he was at a low point that he accepted that for the most part. So we separated. And at this point, like, my dad's sober in AA for probably 5 or so years, and in order for me to leave Dennis, I had to have some money, which I didn't, and... I had to get an attorney, and so I had to go talk to my dad about that because I wanted to ask my father for money. And, this, for me, this was like the first true awareness that I had of what AA was all about. Because at this point, I mean, I've got uncles sober, I've got a grandmother in and out of AA, I've got my mother-in-law's like 7 years sober, brother-in-law sober. But when I had to go ask my dad for money, this was my approach. I was like 23 or 24, and I was going to go to him and tell him I needed X number of dollars to file for a legal separation, and I was totally ready for an argument with him. I mean, because that's what I knew, and that's what I anticipated, and I had planned it all out about how I was going to tell him how cheap he got off on me because I moved out when I was 16 and, you know, he owed me this money and blah, blah, blah. And so I went to my dad that day and it was the complete opposite. And, this is my story, but I'm going to talk about what it is for him because when I went there, my dad just took out his checkbook and he wrote the check for me. He just wrote the check. And this is the miracle that I saw of AA that day. And he looked at me and he said, honey, it doesn't have to be this way. And he didn't say, I told you so. And he didn't say, you know, what I needed to do. And he didn't tell me to even come to program. I mean, he didn't even say it. He just said, it doesn't have to be this way. And I wasn't ready to come here. And I just said, oh, I know, Dad. I'm going to go get some counseling. I'll get some counseling. And I thought he would leave it at that. But he said, well, I know a counselor. You know? And I thought whatever. But so he hooked me up with a counselor and who was very pro Al-Anon and AA. And that's how I ended up coming here for me. So I'm going to this counselor, and every week when I go, she's asking me if I've come to a meeting, and I say no. And I just didn't understand. Like, I didn't see what y'all could give me. And she was very, very, she didn't do it in a judging way, you know, just kind of loved me through that. But what was going on, on the outside of this is that Dennis had joined Alcoholics Anonymous, and he got sober. And we're still separated, but, like, I'm still, like, a little worried that everybody will know that things aren't perfect. I mean, we're separated, but I'm thinking people might know. And so we're doing certain things together still, like bowling. That was important to me that we show up and bowl. And I know, right? And but anyway, some family events, because it was through the holidays and stuff, like, and I see my father and Dennis like buddies. They're like buddies now because they're in AA together. And they're saying all those little, you know, oh, yeah, keep coming back. And they're, oh, yeah, one day at a time. And, oh, it'll get better beyond your wildest dreams. And I'm, like, mad because I'm thinking, Dad, he's the one that got me pregnant, you know? But I was like, what's going on here? Like, it should be about me, and now it's about them getting along. My father, they wouldn't even let Dennis come into the full living room during Christmas some years back, right? Now they're like best friends. And so I got to my first meeting on a resentment because I was like, I'm going to learn those little sayings. That's right. I can say one day at a time. And but anyway, so I go to my first meeting. Ooh, Joan was there. And I walk in and, you know, I'm 24 and I look around the room and it's all these like 40-something, 50-something women, and I'm thinking, you know, I don't have anything in common with these women. And, you know, and somebody had told me, probably my dad, but maybe another family member, to, like, you know, listen for the similarities and, you know, that I wasn't as unique as I thought I was. So I'm in my first meeting, and, you know, I knew at that point my life was unmanageable. Like, I got, and it, the first step means a lot more to me today than it did 20 years ago. But I knew that I was powerless, and I knew my life was unmanageable. And in that first meeting, though, they asked if there was a newcomer, and I raised my hand. And so, like, the 20 or so people all spoke to me at that meeting. That's what they did, if there was a newcomer in the room. And you know, I love to be the center of attention, you know, but I wanted it on my terms. And, you know, I ended up, like, being the center of attention there that day. And I wished I didn't raise my hand, but I did. But by the end of the meeting, like, something was there, just that love and serenity that, like, I always thought if people said they were happy, they were lying. And they didn't have any reason to lie to me. Like, I just could see it in their eyes, and I was hooked. Like, the hope of step two hooked me that day. And I've been an active member ever since. I mean, to this day, I still go to 3 or 4 meetings a week, and I'm hooked to that. I love that hope that comes from the meetings. And, you know, and then I just, I did pretty much what you told me to do. You know, I love that, you know, I was able to do it with love and encouragement along the way. I did get a sponsor, and I didn't do my 4th and 5th step with her. I'd only stayed in Syracuse for a year, but I was so full of guilt and shame that I had to kind of dump quite a bit on her. And I did a lot of that in the first year, but in a good way. And she, you know, she loved me. That was the first feeling of unconditional love that I had ever. I know today that it was in my life before then, but I felt it from my first sponsor. And I will be forever grateful to her for that. I will always, always remember that first time. I was like, she loves me anyway, you know? You know, and that's one of the things that I try to, you know, pass on and give out, just that unconditional love. And it's true. Like, I'm telling my story today, you know, but me, when I'm writing my list of assets and defects, like, this isn't what I think I'm good at. And, you know, maybe it's good, maybe it's not, but it's my perception is that this isn't one of my assets. But you can tell me anything, and I will love you. I work for people on death row today. I mean, that's my clientele. They can tell me anything, and they know it. To me, like, that's what this program gave me. I'm here telling my story because I've been asked to, and I'm doing it the best that I can. But truthfully, like, to know what my assets are and to be able to use them is amazing to me, because when I was going to the counselor, I'm getting a little off track, but when I was going to the counselor that my dad referred me to, she said to me, I'll never forget it, here's an assignment. Who are you? And she said, you tell me who you are, but I don't want to know whose daughter you are, whose mother you are, whose spouse you are, whose friends you are. Like, who are you? And I had nothing to say. Nothing. Like, I didn't know how to describe myself if it wasn't in relation to someone else. And today I can. Like, I know that I'm, you know, that I am loving and spiritual, and, you know, I can, and I'm competitive. Like, I better win that free trip back here next year, you know? You know, I mean, but I'm competitive with my, you know, myself. It's like, I don't have to win at your expense or whatever. I still love to be the center of attention, but I don't have to be. Like, it just can be fun, like it had to be before. So today I know who I am, and the program gave me that. But anyway, so I got sidetracked. I'm not even sure where, but I want to talk a little bit about just my spiritual experience, you know, here, because, you know, like I said, when I first got here, I was really angry at God. You know, and I didn't understand what it meant to, like, when we got to the third step and turn our will and our lives over. Like, none of that made sense to me. And so when I was first in the program, my group was my higher power, and my sponsor too, in a way, because I'll give you an example of that. So I had been new in the program. I was separated from my husband. I was worked for a friend of mine, and then my husband and I decided to get back together, and he joined the Air Force. I had to quit my job. I didn't even know how to quit a job. You know, I think you were talking, one of the speakers last night, like, about just not even knowing how to do, like, normal everyday things. Like, I didn't even know how to quit a job. And, I think it was you talking about not know how to buy certain items of clothing. And so I didn't know how to quit a job, you know. And so I had been talking to my sponsor with, like, how to act like a mature adult and, you know, have a normal conversation. And what ended up happening is my boss got wind of it before I was ready to have the conversation with him. And he had come to me, and he was like, Sarah, come to the office. And, like, he knew Dennis and I were separated and all this kind of stuff because we were friends. And he said to me, I heard that Dennis joined the Air Force and we need to talk. So I'm like following him down the hallway. Now, me and my will, like I was like conjuring up all the four-letter words I could think of, and you know, I'm ready to tell him about what I'm doing and blah, 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 and none of his business and blah, blah, blah. And you know, I took a second and I thought, you know, what would Linda do? You know, and Linda was my first sponsor, and it was just like she'd act like a mature, respectful woman. And I went into that, you know, meeting, and he was not pleasant towards me. He was not happy about my decision, and like, it's my decision, but this is how enmeshed we all were. Like, my boss thinks that he should have had a vote about what I was doing. And, you know, but I turned around and I left that conversation with my dignity and grace. And I'm not really sure that had ever happened before then. So, you know, that was my first experience about just like, you know, turning things over, you know, and relying on what you were telling me to do. And that's what I've continue to do. You know, that was my first time, like, really, my sponsor, you know, when I talked about it and pointed out that that was, you know, a third step. And, you know, I have a different concept today, certainly. I mean, you know, 20 years of program and life has, you know, helped me to grow, you know, more in that area. But, you know, I was never able to see the good in situations ever before I'd come in here. Again, I think that's another one of my assets now, you know. I work with people who've done tragic things. You know, I've had deaths in my family that were unexpected and early in people's lives, you know, but I've been able to look and see my God in those situations and good things that have come out of it. And, you know, good things have happened in my life. I, about 10 years into the program, my mom got cancer. I lived in Montgomery. She was in New York, and at this point, my parents were divorced. My mom was remarried. My father's in a relationship, and we didn't have much money. Dennis had joined the Air Force. He was early on in rank, and I was a student and working, and we had our daughter, and my mom was in New York dying, and, you know, I'm so grateful because the program allowed me to go and be with her in the last months of her life and just love her, you know. And that's why I say, like, when I learned to really live on love, it's a different concept of it from when I thought Dennis and I would live on love. But when I went up there, like, I had learned that, like I had said earlier, she was just another woman on this earth doing the best she could do. And, you know, I have four siblings at the time. None of them had recovery. And, you know, I mean, I could just see, like, the difference in how each of us interacted with my mom. And, you know, I was so grateful to the program. And I could be an example of the program, you know, to just be there and love her. And anyway, we didn't have much money. I was kind of back and forth because teenager at the time. And my daughter was a teenager at the time. And, I have a friend in the program, and she had come to me one afternoon, and she called me, and she said, I have a frequent flyer ticket I would like to give you so that you can, you know, get back home to see your mom soon. And this was on a Monday night, and so I said, well, oh, and first I said no. I was like, oh, no, thank you. And then I talked to someone in the program. I said, you call her right back and take that ticket, which I did. And I'm so grateful. But I call her back and I say, yeah, you can get me a ticket. And she said, well, when do you want to go? And this was Monday night. And I said, I'll need 2 days to get everything done with school and just making sure my daughter be settled. And so get me a ticket for Thursday. She says, fine. So all the next day, it's a Tuesday, I'm like running around, taking care of business, getting things done, because I'm going to be leaving again for whatever, we didn't know how long. And she called me Tuesday night at about 11:15, and I was laying in bed, Dennis and I, and I was talking to him, and I said, and I was crying, just kind of the grieving of that I knew I was losing my mom, and I told him that I said, I wish I would have told Kelly to get the ticket for Wednesday, because I had gotten everything taken care of that I needed to, and every day mattered then, you know. I mean, they always do, but Like, that was blatant that it mattered. And I wanted that extra day with her. And my phone rang, and it was Kelly, and she said, "You're going to kill me, but I forgot to confirm your ticket for Thursday." And there was just a lot that she had to do to, like, get the ticket in my name and all that. And she said, "Is there any way you can leave tomorrow?" You know? And I had an extra day with my mom. I got there on Wednesday. But, you know, like, I don't think that happened to me because I'm in Al-Anon and I, you know, now know and I have a higher power. But what I do know, without a doubt, is I wouldn't have been able to see that it was my higher power. You know, you all helped me to see that. And because if I didn't have the program, like, I'd have been angry that she was dying. She was only 56, you know. And I'd have been angry, and I'd have been, why me, and this isn't fair, and all of that. But, you know, it just is what it is. And you all gave me the gift to be able to just see that. And, you know, I'll be forever grateful for that. And it's really how I live my life today. Like, when things are going on that, you know, aren't my way and I want to feel sorry for myself, I am just reminded that it's not all about that. It's not about me. And I can make a choice to see something different. Another, like, incredible example of the program is that when my mom was dying, that flight, I stayed up there for about a month and took care of her and went home. And then she had stopped her feedings. We knew she was going to pass. But my father and my stepmom were both in the home when my mom passed away, with my mother and her second husband. You know, my parents gave me an example of what it means to continue to love and forgive. You know, I mean, in their divorce, like, it was an issue at first, but not for very long. And we flew my mother from Syracuse, because she was, or from Albany, down to Fort Myers, because she had built a home that she never was going to live in. They were going to retire there, but she wasn't going to be able to live in it, and she wanted to see it. And I flew down with her, and my father and my stepfather were there to help set up for her. So, you know, I've had a lot of great examples of the miracles of AA and of the miracles of love. So, anyway, Dennis and I got back together. Obviously, he's here with me today. But when that happened, you know, we were separated. We were both in program, and you know, I came to realize that he was not the reason for my unhappiness, and that was actually my doing. And we had decided to try to work the marriage out. And you know, everybody on the outside of program was telling me I was crazy. And everybody in the program was saying, do it a day at a time, see what happens. You know, just work your program, do it a day at a time, do it a day at a time and see what happens. And we celebrated 28 years of marriage this year. And and we have a lovely daughter. She's 29. What? What? I missed something? Oh, yeah. Well, because I couldn't get married till I was 18. Yeah. And we've been together 31 years. Did you miss that whole part? 16 and pregnant? We can go back. We got time, right? You know, but that daughter that I held and tried to apologize to is this amazing woman. And just recently she came to me and she told me that she was struggling. She's 29 years old, educated, highly educated. She's married, and she's got a fantastic job. And she told me she just wasn't happy, and she didn't really know how to be happy. And I did exactly what was done to me, and I told her it didn't have to be that way. And a few months ago, she started coming into my group and learning about Al-Anon and how it can help her, you know. And I just love it. Like, I totally love it because, you know, everything good in my life is because of this program. I mean, I have friends, and shoot, I came to you a double high school dropout. I dropped out twice, because they wouldn't let me come pregnant. And then when I came back after I had my daughter and Dennis worked nights, then he got a day job, we couldn't afford a sitter. And I have a master's degree, you know? That would not have happened. Like, I did not think I was smart enough. I remember sitting in the living room of a friend of mine in the program. She was valedictorian of her class, you know, engineer from LSU. And I was saying that I wanted to go to school, but I was scared. Because when you're in school, they know you don't know because you're there to learn, right? So there was, you know, it was out there for God and everybody. And I said, well, I'm not smart like you, you know. And I was reminded that words are powerful, and I'm smart in a lot of ways and probably could get through school, which I did. So, you know, I'm educated. I have a higher power, and I have a wonderful life. So I get to watch women go through the steps, and I get to, you know, I get to see the love in their life turn on and the spiritual life of them turn on too. I couldn't ask for anything more. If I had given you a list of what I wanted when I came in here, oh my God, that's so sad. It can't even compare. So thank you for the life that I have. Thank you for like taking an adult child and turning me into a grown, mature woman. You know, because it's a great feeling today. So I'm going to close because I could keep going, but I won't. I'm going to close and just say thank you, and I love each and every one of you.
On behalf of Fellowship by the Sea, we want to give you this gift, SWAT gift. After a moment, we'll come down.
I'm going to take it out because, you know, I copy and the other two speakers did, so what I'm going to do is... Oh, it's beautiful. Oh, it's got the Serenity Prayer and my name.
Yay. You want to go this side?
Mm-hmm.